You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
It's nice to see you two ladies finally enjoying each other.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 30, Carpe Diem. That means 10 cents for a fish. Now here are your story editor.
Hello, Sarah.
How soon it falls apart. Hello.
We have some site business before we get into it because it is again with this week. Do you want to tease our topic because it is yours?
I certainly do. We are going to be performing a thought experiment, which could end in a disaster and entering the Matrix for all of us. What would happen if Melrose Billy Campbell replaced actual actor Billy Campbell of Tales of the City, mm-hmm. right?
The Rocketeer,
and Helix, of course.
Of course.
Just kidding. That's not of course. No one else watched that. Please join our Patreon, and then you can listen to this and all of our other fine, again with this episodes. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what you bring to the table in terms of what Andrew Hsu would have ruined beyond repair in Billy Campbell's career.
Yes. So that's patreon.com/againwiththis. And just a note, too, we are only, as of this recording, $75 away from meeting our next goal. So if we hit that, we will be doubling the number of Patreon episodes we deliver every month from 1 to 2. You will get 1 every 2 weeks instead of 1 every 4 weeks. So if you have friends who have not joined the Patreon yet, tell them now is the time. Get on that. If you can, you know, kick up your pledge from 2 to 5 or 5 to 10 or whatever have you, that's, you know, that's between you and your accountant, I guess. But patreon.com/againwiththis. We're very close to hitting our next goal. So help us do that and we can bring you more stuff.
Indeed.
All right. Let us get into Carpe Diem, starting with our B plot. Jo thinks Jake is jealous of her career. On the beach, Jo is shooting an extremely weird lingerie ad or catalog or something. There are pictures of this in the visual aids. I will try to describe it. Literally, it's a bed on the beach with a bunch of women in bra and underwear and pajama sets and, like, not even swimsuits draped on it. Like, what even? Who? What?
Like, yeah, what? I know. It's very confusing. And also not a it's not fashion.
No. And it makes no sense from any perspective. Like, you know how sometimes when you're on your king size bed on the beach at 2 in the afternoon, sitting on a bed with your 4 friends in your bra and panty sets, like, what? Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
Regardless, we watch Jo shoot this for 10 minutes because boobs. I don't really mind how much screen time it eats up. But anyway, one of the models is the briefly famous model actress Vanessa Angel, one of the many hot Vanessas of the 90s. Look them up. Marcel was another. It's also Paradis. A. Williams, Lost to Time. Oh, wait, she's still on the show for now. Anyway, this model Vanessa Angel is playing is named Karen. and is sardonic about the function that she serves in culture and the toll it takes on her physically and psychologically. And on a brief break, she invites Joe out with her and some other models that night. So instead of the hot model and her friends taking Joe somewhere cool, Joe takes them to where else? Shooters.
Eclipse? Just kidding. The Bellage?
So close. Karen has just said she never wants anyone else to shoot her again when Jake comes in and all the models' tongues drop out of their jaws, which, relatable. And he immediately notes that Joe, like the models, is smoking, which she normally doesn't do. And Karen tells Jake he has a massively talented girlfriend and he hopes he doesn't mind if she becomes, she hopes he doesn't mind if she becomes a huge international success, which, I mean, off this catalog, I doubt it, but fine. Jake cheerfully says that would be great. Turns out the cool club is their next stop, but a bike just came into the shop, so Jake can't join them. But he's totally fine with Joe going out and tells her to stop by his place if she doesn't get home too late. And whereas you think this is setting up her stumbling by at like 4 a.m. super drunk and trying to fuck, that's not what happens. We don't return to the storyline for several days. Whereupon Joe goes strutting into Jake's place to tell him about a great job she just booked shooting Karen's next assignment after meeting a photo editor when she and Karen went out the other night. And Jake's congratulations are kind of muted, so Joe has to explain what this means, talking about Karen being a top model, which she obviously isn't based on the beach bed we fucking saw at the top of this plot line. But whatever. And how this next shoot is the big break that Joe's been waiting for. Jake is excited, he's just not wild about Karen and her crowd, which he saw for 3 seconds, and how Joe acts around them, which he saw for 2 seconds. And Joe suggests maybe he doesn't know her that well, and also that she thinks it hurt his ego to see her succeed, and she starts to leave. And he starts to do an arm grab, but I guess from her experience being married to Charles, she has more practice getting out of that hold, which you can see in the visual aids. And instead of continuing the conversation, she goes out with Karen to celebrate. And we never find out if that is his issue, because that's where we leave this plot line for this episode. Okay, seems like a waste of time, but I guess they had to fill it with something. That's it. Anything to add?
I mean, like, it's going somewhere, but also once you get there, it'll be like, who cares? But
yeah. Yeah, you got to set it up, I suppose.
Mm.
Moving on to the thing they've been setting up for 5,000 episodes, our A-plot. Amanda tries to keep Allison and Billy apart, while Jane starts suspecting Michael. Allison is back in her extremely ugly beige floral blazer.
Oh, God, that thing. So I want it dead.
This time, she has paired it with an equally vibrant gray skirt as she comes out to the kitchen where Billy is making an elaborate workday breakfast. Based on how awkward she is, it's clear this is their first interaction since she kissed him and he's the first one to say good morning. He's eager to resume all the kissing, but she flinches away from him because overnight she had a chance to retreat back into her fears and insecurities. She doesn't want them to jump into anything when they haven't even gone on a real date yet, so he's going to take her out for the most romantic time she's ever had on less than 12 hours notice to plan it. But she's all about it and calls him Prince Charming. And she also wants to keep their new status private for now. She wishes she didn't know so much about Michael and Jane. Speaking of whom, Jane is cozying up to Michael while he shaves again, this time to exposit that they're a day away from their second wedding anniversary, which, wow, he got itchy feet in a big hurry. I yeah. somehow thought they'd been married longer than that.
Me too. Also, ouch. You should have boned Rob Estes when you had the chance, girl.
No kidding.
I mean, that was true anyway. Sorry. Calabro, but no.
That's true. We also forgot to say at the time that they were married in real life. I forgot that. Josie Bissett and Rob Estes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are they still married? They're not, are they?
Don't think so. I think not.
All right. Continue. I will confer with the internet.
Thank you. So Jane wants to fuck, speaking of that. But if Michael is late for work today, he won't be able to get their anniversary off. She makes him promise to get the night off, which he immediately hedges by saying he'll probably have to be on call for part of it. And he kicks her out of the bathroom as the foreboding music starts. Cut to the hospital, where Michael comes up and opens Kimberly's door as soon as she's parked, and she kisses him right in front of the building where all their colleagues, who presumably know he's married, also work. She comes in hot, telling him about her sexy dream of fucking an Italian. And I know she means him, but it's funny to picture her with Mario from the video game. So I will choose to do that. Now so will you, except it's not your choice. I'm not sorry. She checked their schedules and both she and Michael are off the next night. So he has to tell her about the anniversary and that he has plans with Jane. And true to her no strings attached word, she says that's what he should do. But then they can't coordinate their schedules for the night after that. And she falls apart saying their whole arrangement is a mistake and blah, 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 blah. He says he'll try to work something up, but she's already gone. Any news?
Yes, they are divorced.
Okay.
They have two children together, Mason True and Maya Rose.
Not bad.
They got a divorce in 2006. Estes married teacher and surfer Aaron Bolt. And they have a son, Makai Ever Bolt Estes, I guess.
Okay. Nah, good. I guess if you marry a surfer, Makai is an okay name.
Yes. They all live in, Mason and Makai and Estes and Aaron live in Orange County.
Oh, nice.
I don't really know where Josie Bassett is, but I can look that up if anyone cares. Spoiler, you don't.
You know where she lives. She lives on at a wedding resort in Vancouver.
Yes.
Where with she Jack is Wagner not having sex.
Jack Wagner.
All right. Montage time. Allison and Billy each go through their closets looking for something sexy to wear. Just a reminder that he said 7:30, so I would like to know what time young professionals got off work in the 90s, that they've gotten home and changed into lounge clothes and had time to dick around like this, because that does not seem like a very long work day to me. But anyway, Allison comes into Billy's room to see what sort of date she should be dressing for. Clip two.
Casual, but dressy. You know, sexy, but a little demure.
Oh.
I don't know what it is about Andrew Shue's pronunciation of demure, but I hate it. I really hate it.
Demure? Yeah, it's Jersey.
Yeah. Annoyed, she sarcastically thanks him for his help, and he protests that a guy should be surprised when he comes to the door. And she replies that it spoils the mystery when you have to wait for your date to finish clipping his toenails before you can put your makeup on. He runs through the opening she's provided to say he thinks she could stand to wear a little less makeup, actually. And when she presses, he finally says he's taking her to a concert in the park, so she goes to get her jeans out of the dryer. And Allison runs into Jane in the laundry room, and they chit-chat about the imminent anniversary. Allison managing to be cool and betray nothing about what she knows, unlike all the other TV characters who can't lie for shit. And then Jane starts talking about what she's learned about commitment in her two whole years of marriage. And Allison starts to clench up, although Jane doesn't notice, and Allison excuses herself before she gives herself away. And Billy has brought Allison to an especially tootily jazz concert. Clip three.
Oh.
Try the breakup. Marriott Spa. Two tables over, it's Kelly's second birthday of the season featuring Dave Koz.
God.
Yeah.
I know it's an outdoor concert, but still, Allison is being very rude to the people around her by whining, not quietly, about keeping the terrible secret of Michael's affair. It's also not real sexy first date conversation, and Billy tries to get her off it and onto her back to make out, which she rolls with briefly before sitting back up and announcing that she has to tell Jane what she knows. And Billy tells her not to get involved, but when he tries to resume kissing, Allison asks to hold off the commencement of their physical relationship for now. He thought this was what she wanted and reminds her that the other night she practically seduced him, whereupon she sits up aghast to say she just did what they've both been thinking about for a long time. And then pivots to complaining that he's not listening to her. And in turn, he says she's using the Mancini affair as an excuse not to follow up with boning Billy, and she snaps that he just took all the romance of the out of the evening, like, bitch, he did, but also doesn't deny that she's doing that. And Billy's like, shrug, let's go home. And they do.
Also, Courtney Thorne-Smith clearly has a cold. So you wonder if this wasn't written in to stall so that she wouldn't have like raw nostrils during their extended first time, but we'll get to it. Barf.
So the next morning, Allison enters Billy's room so that the two of them can tell us that they A, went to bed horny, and B, went to college. Clip four.
How'd you sleep?
Okay, I guess.
except for pretty intense dreams.
Me too. Waves crashing against the rocks.
Flowers opening in the storm.
Guys, God.
You know, there's no law that says you can't bone for the first time in the morning. Just do it, please. Off screen, preferably.
Please, Bye. Preferably. Please, off screen. We will not get our wish. Spoiler.
No.
Allison apologizes for ruining the previous night and suggests a low-key do-over, staying in, having pizza and wine, doing something about their dreams, and Billy's about it. At the hospital, Michael tries to have a private conversation with Kimberly about the state of whatever they're trying to do, but by now she's calmed down and says she had no right to yell at him about his anniversary. She's just jealous. But Michael says all he's been thinking about is Kimberly, so when he's at dinner with Jane, Kimberly should beep him with an emergency so Michael can escape and go fuck Kimberly. She's not sure and starts ramping up about how guilty she feels, but he says she has nothing to feel guilty about. She's just being true to her feelings, and so is he. He'd rather be sleeping with her tonight than anyone else in the world, and she melts. And we return to D&D as Allison is mid-rant at Amanda about getting sidelined on some campaign, and a bunch of their colleagues watch, which is the best part, where they're all like, here we go, a fucking again. Like, the extras are really very good in this scene.
I know. They're just like, can I make a fucking phone call? Cats.
You're blocking the Xerox machine. Thanks. Amanda, back in the bridal vest, tells Allison to try to be a team player. And Allison whines that she doesn't know why Amanda spends so much energy trying to keep her down. Like, don't you? But then Lucy interrupts to call Allison into her office and read her for filth in clip 5.
I want you to understand something. Amanda is your boss, like it or not. She makes the decisions. You carry them out. I don't ever want to see you challenging her in the middle of the workplace again. Is that clear?
Yes, it is.
Good. Now, as you may know, we're planning an executive retreat this weekend.
Amanda mentioned it, yeah.
I want you to go home, pack your bags after work, and come back here and catch the group bus to Palm Springs at 9 o'clock.
Tonight?
You have something better to do?
Well, Billy and I... No.
Good. I'll need you to assist me. And also, the kind of open conflict between you and Amanda is exactly what this retreat is about. Cooperation instead of competition.
Well, I'm grateful, Lucy. This is wonderful.
Can be, if you learn something.
Girl, if anyone needs to learn something here, it's you. And that something is to stop giving Eeyore chances. Please. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just get married and leave the show because you do not know how to manage this beige individual.
So true. So at his fancy dinner with Jane, Michael guiltlessly toasts to 2 years and many more to come. And Jane can't help commenting on how much more relaxed he seems than he generally has lately and how she's missed him and that she feels the hospital's been intruding more and more lately and blah, 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 blah. He says it's the price he pays. But not tonight, she checks. Not tonight, he confirms, right before he gets beeped, just as the waiter presents them with their dessert menus. And Jane yelps, but there's not much she can say as Michael apologizes and books it out of there. And Allison is just leaving now for her retreat, apologizing to Billy for punking out on their plans and kissing him goodbye on the forehead. God. He notes that they've postponed their romance for almost a year, so another couple of nights shouldn't make a difference, like she's not on her way to see Amanda. And he also says he doesn't have much of a choice but to be understanding about her schedule, which is true. And on her way out, Allison passes Jane coming back from dinner alone. After telling Allison what happened, she says she wishes she wasn't so paranoid about whether Michael seems so distant because he doesn't love her. And Jane's already on her way out of the conversation when Allison tells her the whole story about catching Michael kissing Kimberly. And Jane refuses to believe it and insists Allison must have misconstrued what she saw. And Allison's sorry, but she confronted Michael and he basically admitted it, which he didn't, but okay. It's more like I confronted him and he lied badly, but fine. And Jane
he admits it eventually.
I guess that's true. Jane frantically yells that she's never heard such crap in her life, so Allison gives her the number in Palm Springs and tells her to call, even just if it's just to say that Allison is a jerk, I would also like that number, by the way. Jane stiffly tells her to get out of there. Oh no, their friendship, I guess. In Palm Springs, fucking Lucy has Allison and Amanda rooming together because she's an agent of chaos or is already bored by her fiance and is trying to amuse herself by creating drama. Either way, hilariously, Amanda makes Allison, her underling, tip the bellman. And as soon as he's gone, Amanda starts bitching that she was promised her own room. Allison, of course, isn't thrilled about it either, and then whines at Amanda for overpacking, which Amanda parries by slagging off Allison's gift for making one outfit work three ways. And they both realize they're being catty and that Lucy put them together to work on that. Meanwhile, Michael, the shady bitch, doesn't come home until the next morning, finding Jane awake and waiting for him, even though it's not even 6 a.m. yet. She says she couldn't sleep and has to get to work on the swimsuit line. She offers to come home for lunch, but he's still on call and just came home to see her for a couple of hours. This motherfucker thought he could try to get it in with two women in 12 hours. Like, I don't not admire it, but wow.
I mean... Like, you soon get used to his shamelessness. He's, sure, like, very Trumpy as an iconic villain character. But right, it's also, like, there was, like, no lead up to this.
Right.
Like, none.
Yes.
They're just like, here's the heel turn. But, mm-hmm, like, bend your knees. And he leaned into it. And don't get me wrong. It's great. And it was, mm-hmm, overdue. But they could have had some lead up to it. It's like, one day he's just like, yeah, this is bullshit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. So Jane coldly says that Michael's been on call a lot lately, and he mumbles that he sleeps more in the on-call room than he does in his own bed. And Jane finally can't take anymore, and clip six.
Michael, are you having an affair?
What? What are you talking about?
You heard me.
Jane. Gosh, where is this coming from?
Last week, when you said you were at the hospital all day, you came home with sand in your shoes.
Oh, geez, that sure is damning evidence. Did it ever cross your mind that maybe I spent my hour break at the beach?
I know. That's why I didn't mention anything. But then last night, Allison told me that she saw you
kissing Kimberly in the parking lot.
Yes.
Damn it. Jane, Allison told me what she saw. I explained to her that it wasn't a kiss. It was a hug. Kimberly lost a patient, and she just broke down in my arms. Then Allison twisted it around into this juicy piece of gossip that you could try to hurt us with. Oh, that's a really terrific friend we got there.
Why would she do that?
Why do people gossip, Jane? Why do they create malicious rumors about people and then spread them around with such enthusiasm? Because she has no life of her own. That's why. Besides, she's the one who was dating that Keith guy while he was still married. Now, do you remember how you reacted to that, what you said to her?
I told her I thought she was wrong.
Exactly. And now she finally saw a way to try to get you back, to hurt you. I told Allison the truth, Jane. And I asked her not to say anything to you because she was completely off base.
I know, but...
But what? You're gonna believe her over me?
No.
I don't give Josephus that much credit and won't, but that her line delivery on that no at the end of that clip is pretty good, because it's clear she doesn't believe him, but that she doesn't see another choice but to pretend that she does, or to proceed as though she does.
Yeah, and also that she's, like, maybe a little scared of this person.
Yes.
Who has no feelings and no compunction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, she's pretty good. That they are making her grow out her, like, long pixie.
The mushroom cut,
during
yes,
this critical arc for her character is cruel. That's all I had on that.
So as Jane starts to cry for real, Michael says he thinks it's disgusting that Jane's so-called friend would try to break up their marriage. And he pulls her onto his lap and says he could never hurt her because she's his angel, which, ooh, yikes. Yikes.
Yeah.
And he checks again that she believes him, and she says she does, but she forgot to tell her face, which you can see in the visual aids. Yeah, I don't want to be, like, you know, stereotypical, but, like, that angel formulation coming from an Italian Catholic man, it's like, that's a lot of, a lot of baggage coming at you. Just saying. So, in Palm Springs, Lucy's running a breakfast meeting next to the pool that other hotel guests are just fucking around in, which you can also see in the visual aids.
Can we talk about what she's wearing?
Sure.
She's wearing a, like, floral dress, like a midi dress, which, fine. But then she's wearing a vest in the same pattern over it.
Yeah.
And it's, like, flapping open. I don't understand this outfit. I really don't. And, like, I lived through the 90s. Like, I just don't understand it.
Right. Yeah.
It's terrible. You'll see it in the visual aids. You are welcome.
The next thing she says is that away from the office and their partners, this is the employee's chance to let it all hang out. Allison is extremely dressed to hold everything in, as you can see in the visual aids as well. The letting it all hang out doesn't start yet. The first task is to find the person you work most closely with and do an exercise where you switch roles, which sounds terrible and like a real trap, but sure.
Yep.
Amanda agrees with me and doesn't intend to do it, to Allison's horror and shock. But when Amanda dismisses the idea that Allison is eager to be her, this happens. Clip 7.
Allison, where's that report?
Excuse me? You heard me.
Here, I've been slaving over it all night.
Allison, this is completely slipshod work. I mean, there's absolutely no attention to detail. How do you expect to get anywhere? Look at those shoes. Who taught you how to dress, Barbara Bush?
Oh, come on. I don't cut you down like that.
Yes, you do. You should hear yourself. The way you treat me, Amanda, is not right.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to. But look at it from my side of the fence. You are so competitive with me. I date Billy with your complete permission, after assurances that the two of you are not a couple. And as soon as we start to get close, you go after him.
That is not exactly how it happened.
Oh, no? So you're telling me you didn't dump Keith to go after Billy?
It's more complicated than that.
That's right. You used Keith to make Billy jealous. You quit your job, you moved away, and then when it was clear that Billy wouldn't chase you to Seattle, you came back to L.A. to chase him.
No, that is not true.
I put a lot of energy and passion and emotion into that relationship, and you did everything you could to destroy it. So you'll excuse me if I'm not the world's most sympathetic boss, but I just don't trust you, Allison. I don't trust you at all.
These are very fair points being made.
Yeah. I also feel like perhaps D&D's human resources department is not as muscular as it might be. not the last time I'll be making that assessment.
They're probably overwhelmed by complaints about people that don't want to be working on the business balcony that they have to walk up the...
I was just going to say workers' comp for people falling off the business balcony. Because they're letting it all hang out at a work event.
Speaking of Billy, he's in the park recapping his plot line to a confused Jake and sublimating his sexual frustration by dribbling a soccer ball. Jake is shocked that Billy and Allison got to the precipice of fucking and then didn't, and basically orders Billy to go to Palm Springs and close the deal. Then it's dinner time in Palm Springs, where Allison finds Amanda and apologizes for their dust up earlier. Amanda doesn't want to fight anymore, but she also doesn't want Allison to keep being so bitchy to her. I'm paraphrasing. Allison apologizes again. She starts to try to make peace about Billy, but Amanda suggests that they table that one for the weekend, and Allison agrees. Amanda's glad Allison came after all, and Allison is too. But so much for that fragile peace, probably, because Billy just showed up at the front desk looking for Allison. He's worried about crashing when he's not dressed for the party, so he writes a note and asks someone to bring it to the beautiful blonde girl, which there's definitely only one of those at the party. But at least Billy had the foresight to put Allison's name on the note, but the hotel employee gives it to Amanda, who obviously reads it. And after a commercial, it is she who meets Billy in the lobby. Clip 8.
Listen, Allison got your note, and she wanted me to tell you that this is a business trip, one that's very important to her career at the moment.
Ah, I realize that, but...
But what you may not realize is that she's on probation. That's why she's here. And as her boss, I can tell you that it wouldn't look good for her to have friends visiting this weekend.
I understand. I just really need to talk to her.
Well, Lucy's got her cornered. That's why I'm here. Anyway, it's great to see you. Good night.
Yeah, good night.
That's not the wallet inspector. Oh, Billy.
God. Good night.
So, speaking of credulous boobs, Jane comes home to an empty apartment and immediately calls the hospital, asking the nurse on the phone to page Michael. The nurse, who is Mrs. Kim from Gilmore Girls, says that Michael's on a break for the next 2 hours, so Jane decides to stop ignoring what Allison told her and ask for Kimberly's number, since Kimberly and Michael are working on cases together, she says. Mrs. Kim isn't permitted to give out that information and offers to page Michael, but Jane desperately says it's a family emergency, and apparently that works. Back to Palm Springs, where Allison and Amanda are bonding at the cocktail party, wisely without cocktails. Lucy rolls up, happy to see them enjoying each other's company. Her voice is hoarse, and Allison is going to go out to Lucy's car and bring back lozenges. Okay, but it's so she can run into Billy in the parking lot and find out how Amanda interfered. But neither of them is mad at Amanda. They're just happy to see each other. And Mrs. Kim, as we learned, did give Kimberly's address, and Jane does a pop-by in clip 9.
Hi, Jane. What can I do for you?
Is my husband here?
No, of course not.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's on a long break, and I really need to talk to him. I thought he might be here.
Maybe he's at that awful coffee shop near the hospital a lot of times a week.
Kimberly, do you have any antiperspirant that doesn't smell like perfume?
This is Michael, clearly just out of the shower.
Jane.
Thank you. That's all I needed to know.
Oh, the sexy guitar of despair.
Yeah. So he chases after her in his towel, but, you know, towel. So
yeah,
that's where we leave things for those two. Three, I guess. And in Palm Springs, Allison meets Billy in the room he rented and on the bed of which he placed a single pink rose. Never trust a hotel with sheets that are white, by the way. These ones are blue. Just say it looks like it belongs in a nursing home. You can see in the visual aids because it made me mad, but Allison pronounces the room beautiful and then admits that she's really nervous. Isn't he? He would say excited. And it takes forever as they get down to it. And I guess the producers thought this was what the fans wanted after 29 episodes, but their chemistry is not the best. Like, for 2.5 minutes, we just watch network safe foreplay, and that's the end of the episode. Like, we didn't see this much of Donna and David when they were having sex for the first time after, like, a million seasons. But whatever. Congratulations, yeah. You goobers, I guess. Good luck.
Also, Andrew Hsu's on-screen kissing looks like he's eating. He's like Josh Baskin eating baby corn. But, like, after Novocaine, it's real bad. Not sexy at all.
So true. Well, that's it for these idiots. So let us close out by naming our episode MVP.
Matt for not being in it? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to say Lucy for finally telling Allison some shit. I mean, it should have ended with, and that's why you're fired, but I'll take it.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
Least valuable player.
Amanda.
That is fair. I'm going to also...
Because her disruption, like, it was over Billy.
Yeah.
And it didn't work.
Yes. Yeah. Like, nothing sadder than a scheme failed, really. But I'm also going to say Kimberly because, girl, what are you doing? Now you've been caught. Like, this is very embarrassing for you.
Yeah.
As a doctor and a person.
Yeah. Surely matters will improve.
Surely. That's probably the end of this affair now that they've been caught. Only on the up and up from here, I'm sure.
Yeah. We'll find out next time on Again With This. Karen is into threesomes. Michael is a sociopath. And Amanda is pregnant. You'll also be feeling rather nauseated when you peep our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website, againwiththispodcast.com, and or on our Twitter account at AWT90210. Or you can haul your four-poster over to the beach of our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm casual but dressy Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is model citizen Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Prince Charming, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.